On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are doing our best to stay just good friends with Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen in Platonic on Apple, taking a jaunt to the Isle of Man with Saran Jones and Eve Best in Maryland on ITV, and finally getting the chance to sniff out lies with Natasha Lyonne in Poker Face on Sky Max. Plus, as you heard last week, and you may have heard a couple of days ago when it happened, given how loudly Kay was squealing about it, but the stars and creators of Colin from Accounts are on the show this week as well to talk nipple flashes and animal care, specifically Patrick Bramall and Harriet Dyer. No relation. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters and a series that can exclusively reveal what is behind the locked door in Anthony Lockwood's house. Turns out, it's the Type 3 phantoms of the Netflix executives who made the decision to add Lockwood & Co. to the mass grave of great YA shows that the streamer has unceremoniously axed of late, meaning that we will not get to see the rest of Joe Cornish's excellent series. Boyd Hilton, Kay Ribeiro, for you are both here. They came for our winks, and we said, well, something. They came for our warrior nun, and we also actually did speak out. They even came for the bastard son of the devil himself, and we were absolutely furious. What say you about this latest travesty?
It's very sad, yeah. Although, no, it's just very, very sad. It's irritating, annoying, because there are plenty of those YA fantasy shows that I wasn't personally obsessed with, like unlike you, who was obsessed with all of them.
I mean, obviously you grieved for Winx.
I grieved. To be honest, I did not grieve for Winx. I always grieve for shows that's because you feel for the cast and the crew and, you know, all of that. But I didn't personally have a particular...
James, you're the only cheeky winker here.
Yeah. But Lockwood & Co. was great. I really, really enjoyed it. We did a spoiler special, didn't we? Hailing
yes.
out...
Spoke to Joe Cornish.
I think it was number one at one point.
It was great. It was really good. People loved it. Yeah. So obviously Netflix canceled it.
You have to wonder, yeah, what the... obviously, apart from the obvious that not quite... That must have some kind of threshold of number of people.
It's this deranged algorithm thing. Like, we've been chatting about this. Like, what does it mean? Like, they're saying, oh, more people need to watch it in the opening weekend. And so people do. And then they go, oh, yeah, the figures trailed off really quickly. So because you told everyone to watch it in the opening weekend. Yeah. What do you want from us?
Yeah.
It's just like...
Breathe.
I'm really irate. I'm very upset.
It's annoying because I liked Lockwood as well, but it's yeah. just... Yeah.
Do you think
they're just morons.
Do you think the decisions are all made by AI? Do you think that's what it is?
Oh, God, probably. I mean, why not just
that's
run
depressing.
The whole... Yeah, just run the whole TV world with AI. I mean,
the Netflix algorithm is what's going to kill us all ultimately.
It might.
It'll just be like humanity cancelled.
It's annoying to talk because I interviewed Patrick Gibson today, who's in for a future episode of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, spoke to him about Shadow and Bone, didn't you?
Well, it wasn't actually about Shadow and Bone. It was about the second season before we died on Channel 4. But I did ask him about Shadow and Bone and whether that had been... Because that came out, what, a couple of months ago on
season two,
Netflix?
Yeah, that's right.
And they haven't heard yet about season 3 for that. So it's another one. It's another yeah. one, which is, you know, in
Will
doubt.
It be Shadow and Boned? That's the question.
Very good. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it's weird. Well, again, go back to, we've been saying it for years, haven't we? Don't commission so much stuff, maybe. You know,
commission less stuff and, I don't know, give it a chance.
Keep more stuff.
Yeah.
Let more stuff go.
They've got to have faith in their products, right? They just got to hold their nerve.
I just don't think they're even on, that's. I don't think it's just not thinking about it in that way. It's like a different way of, yeah. It's like,
it really made me think of this because I was watching, obviously, as you know, I'm watching Barry at the moment, but you know the episode where her show is on that network,
yeah.
you know, that streaming service. On the streaming service. And it's on the homepage. She's really excited and then it gets cancelled before the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, yeah. oh yeah, unfortunately the algorithm has decided. It's all very pointed and, you know, relevant.
Completely, yeah.
A glimpse into the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. I think they'll. I don't know. I'm saying I have no evidence. I was going to say I think they'll come to their senses and do less.
What, and resurrect Fate the Wings?
Oh no, I don't think they'll do that.
You've got his hopes up there.
Yeah. Sorry. No. I think they'll commission less and you know recommission more, but who knows?
Well, we shall hope and see. Right. Okay. Should we talk about what we have been watching?
Yes.
Who wants to go first?
Okay.
I'll go first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, James, please say you watched the Eurovision.
Do you honestly believe for 1 second I watched a single solitary moment of Eurovision?
I obviously said that as a bit of a joke, but then it was filmed in Liverpool. It was in the UK for once, so I thought maybe just, you know, to experience it.
No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just wondering why James got a particular tie to Liverpool that we didn't know about.
No, but you know.
Yeah, I was confused by that. I was like, it was filmed in Liverpool, Joe. I was like, okay.
No.
Was Shadow and Bone filmed in Liverpool? It might have been.
It's an episode of The Expanse famously took place in Liverpool.
Yeah. No, I just meant it was filmed here. So
I see.
Well, it was a big deal.
So okay. Is it a thing where it's filmed here because did we win last year?
No, Ukraine won, but obviously they can't host this year.
Okay.
Yeah. So
sure.
We came second.
We came second.
So we stepped in.
And it was an absolute bloody triumph. It was brilliant. Liverpool did a great job.
Didn't we come second to last?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I know it was a brilliant.
We did come second to last.
So the opposite of a triumph in that regard.
In that regard, yes. Right. But in terms of hosting the blood, just back off, right?
She's on the edge.
Yeah, I am. I've got to warn everyone. I am a little bit on the edge.
Okay, good. This is going to go well.
Yes. No, but in terms
of
should
we review breeders later on and see what happens?
Oh my god!
Fight to the death. In terms of hosting, it was just a triumph in that regard. Liverpool put on a great show. The host did a great job. Julia, particularly, who was from Ukraine and was, you know, there to represent. And it was just fun. They, you know, everything went to plan largely. I think it largely went to plan. Yeah. There were a couple of moments.
Coming second from last didn't go to plan.
Okay, that didn't go to plan, but it's taking part that counts. I mean, I personally am all about the winnings. I don't want to, but I know people say taking part is what counts, right?
Yeah.
But and we have to give a little shout out to Mel Guidry, who was fantastic.
She was fine.
Shouldn't the shout out be, and I didn't watch this, but I'm fairly certain the MVP was Hannah Waddingham.
Yes, no, Hannah Waddingham was extraordinary. I was coming to that.
Sorry,
right?
Have I stolen your thunder?
You only know that because I mentioned her last week hosting the semi-finals.
Well, no, also because of all the memes and the stuff.
Oh my God, she was sensational. Sure. She was fantastic. And I was going to come to that. And the fact that also they did this rousing rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone and all the hosts walked onto stage and it was just very emotional.
Ooh, because Liverpool.
Yes, because Liverpool.
I understood that reference.
God, your eyes lit up. But Mel Guidry did this really funny thing where she was dressed as a milkmaid that everyone was talking about because it was just so weird and funny and hilarious. And Mel is very amusing. She dressed up with the Polish because she's half of Polish Lithuanian descent, isn't she?
There was a Polish act, wasn't there, from a couple of years ago that did actually have a milkmaid as part of their performance
in 2014.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was very funny. If you saw the image, well, actually, I was going to say you'd laugh. You probably wouldn't, but you might smirk.
Okay, I'll take a smirk.
Yeah. So the Eurovision was a pretty big deal, James, and that was fun to watch. Did you watch it, Boydo?
I did, yeah. I watched it. But I actually have some criticisms.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Since you brought it up.
Oh, my God. What?
First of all, I think they raised expectations massively. You know, there was this whole thing about where they had rehearsed the whole thing the day before. And in fact, interestingly, you know, the marks are given, the jury gives their marks for each act, James. And then the British public get to vote as well. But the jury gets to see the rehearsal and they basically base their voting on the rehearsal, which is interesting.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. Then the public on the night watches. Yeah, then they add in hundreds of votes from the public. So I've got one of my criticisms is they don't explain. This is relatively recent. It's a bit of a mix of jury marks, which is literally like six or seven people, you know, supposed experts on pop music or whatever, deciding who they want to give their points to. Then the public comes in, and the public vote is worth a lot of a completely like Finland was it? I think that went from. Towards the end of the vote, when it was just the juries, and then went second once the public votes had come in, they didn't explain how many points are available from the public vote, and so it's a complete mystery. They're going so that you know Graham Norton goes, "Oh, and 230 points go to Belgium," and you're like, "Oh, how many points exactly are available?" And no one mentions it.
Do you know what?
I know this is
that's the difference.
Yeah,
I mean that's a really great point. But there's a difference between you and me. You spotted that, cared about that, and I was like, just let it wash over me.
I mentioned this on Twitter, and a lot of people said to me, "This is." They explained to me what the votes were worth and how many you can get. But I was like, no, that's not my point. Thanks for explaining to me. But the point is, it should have been explained to the viewers on the TV show. That's my first criticism.
Right.
Secondly,
he's limbering up.
There was a big. I started saying in the rehearsal, there was a big like, people were saying Scott Mills and people were saying, oh, they it was like behind closed doors, so that people couldn't see the big secret surprise on the night. So
what was the surprise?
Well, this is the thing. Who was the surprise? Everyone, people were thinking Paul McCartney, you know, Liverpool, blah blah blah. And
it was Sonia, wasn't it?
It was Sonia.
Who's Sonia? Red Sonia.
Sonia. I mean, that's a good question. Yeah.
She. I mean, love Sonia. No, nothing
Sonia's
against
a
Sonia.
Legend.
She's a legend, but. Come on.
I don't think that was the surprise.
You didn't need to record it. Well, the other option was Jan Leeming, who had an extended interview, former newsreader Jan Leeming.
She was funny.
Got a lot of airtime in the interval. And maybe it was her. But I mean, literally, it was like, who else is the big secret? There was just no big secret special surprise guest star. And it was then the You Were Never Walk Alone bit, which was moving. But
it was
I have to say, if you're going to get someone to sing You Were Never Walk Alone, this big set piece thing, get someone I've heard of. It was just some bloke who won Eurovision a few years ago.
I'm sorry, but
did you know who that guy was? Who sang
we can't ruddy bloody cater it towards just you.
No.
Someone I've heard of.
King
Boyd needs
the world
to be
would have heard of. Madonna. Right, Madonna did Eurovision a few years ago, right?
Did
remember?
She?
Yes. She performed at Eurovision.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. Now you've got me doubting it. Oh, God. Someone Google Madonna.
Are you sure it wasn't someone from Bucks Fizz?
No, I think it was Madonna. Anyway, they had this guy, Cheryl this Lomark, singing You Never Walk Alone, kind of in an okay way, but not particularly brilliantly.
Oh, here we go.
They should have got a famous Liverpudlian singer to sing, like Holly Johnson.
Okay, fine.
You know, or whatever, from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. It was just like, who is this guy? So, yeah, that's because.
I've got other issues.
Oh, yeah, and finally, the UK entry was so mediocre, and everyone in the build up to it, right?
As, you know, the voting would tend to indicate, 100%. Yes.
Do you know
but
what
was interesting is, what happens now, this is what happens with the UK entry now, it happens every single year, is everyone gets really defensive about it and delusional, like, oh no, it's not terrible, it's really good actually.
Political.
Yeah, you just listen to it a few times. It's like, it's not like supporting, you know, it's not like supporting your country in a war. You don't have to have the propaganda, you know, to pretend this is a really good song. It was a mediocre song that was never going to do well. And actually, if you looked at the betting the day before, it was actually favourite to come last. It was almost incredible that came second from last.
I'm excited about this week's podcast because Boyd is on a fucking tear today.
I'm actually not I'm not super defensive. I mean, I don't actually watch Eurovision every year, you know, like I just... I just tuned in because it was
in
Liverpool.
You just tuned in just to annoy James.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't hate the song, but I think they didn't have the stage presence that all the other countries, right? So, like, it was very, like, boring compared to some of the other acts. So it was an all right-ish song, and then it just wasn't spectacular in any way.
Uh-huh. And a vocal was way too low in the mix as well, which is weird.
Oh my God, can I just say something? When you said that, you had one elbow jauntily on the table.
I think you're fine. Yeah, the mixing was totally off.
He turned to me like he was a professional singer.
It just was. It was just unfortunate. And another funny thing was everyone went on about how once you see, you know, the song might be mediocre and everything, but wait till you see the staging of it. It's brilliant. Oh my God, James has just lifted the desk gratuitously. Are you bored? We'll stop talking about Eurovision in a minute, honestly.
Oh my God, the desk is so high now. Boyd and I, as shorts people, got our noses resting on the top of it. But how did you feel about Mel's? Did you not even like the milkmaid?
Yeah, the best bits were Mel was great, Graham Norton was great as you. Yeah. Graham Norton was even funnier than usual, he did. It was slightly weird that he was presenting on stage and in the booth. It was slightly odd technicality that he had to do both. But when he was back in the booth, he was really scathing about some of the acts. I thought brilliantly scathing. And then had to kind of go back on stage and be positive and up and like, they're all brilliant.
Oh, they did some cheesy bits, which he also, he acknowledged was cheesy.
Of course,
at the time,
but you know, I mean, 4 fucking hours though of TV. So it's epic.
It's
hard to imagine I didn't watch it.
Of course I stayed up for the results, yeah. I mean, you're...
What time did it finish?
Finished at like 12:15. It started 8:00. Oh, yeah, it's epic.
Wow.
It's
a whole evening of fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no.
She's got something else. Carry on.
And I am going to need this table to go lower.
Right, yep. So you don't like the table?
No, it's too high.
Is it because I leaned on the thing? That's
yeah, we were trying to get you to get off your pompous high horse about the singing. Boydo.
Okay.
BAFTAs.
Yes.
They were great.
Yes.
They were great, James. I don't know if you watched it.
I feel like you're hijacking the news section, but carry on. We can do it here if you want to.
Oh, sorry. But it was what else?
I mean, on a technicality, you can kind of get away with it.
You're talking about the...
Robin Romesh.
The host.
Yes.
Oh, you're not going to talk about... We don't want to go through the results.
I just want to talk about the fact that I think it's a brilliant decision to have a couple of comedians hosting. It just transforms the whole thing because obviously they're very piss-takey and just makes it more fun. One thing I could live without, and I've spoken to Boyd about this before, is the behind-the-scenes interviews, because for me they just didn't work at all, and I'd rather see more of the categories getting aired, you know, like the awards being given rather than just summarised. as a little.
Although, to be fair, it is annoying. It wasn't as bad as the film BAFTAs, which famously had, you know, cut between Richard D. Grant hosting for most of the time, and then Alison Hammond kind of somewhere else, another bit, interviewing, like, Jerry Halliwell or whatever, which was really weird and awkward.
No, boy,
they
this
did
was
slightly
on, no,
less of that.
No.
No, I mean, it's still annoying.
This
I agree
was
with you.
On a level of that. It was really
You know what the problem
really
is, right? Here's the problem
awful.
With things like this, with the BAFTAs. The BBC, effectively, I think, delude themselves into thinking, James has got one eyebrow raised, like kind of James Bond.
Have you plucked?
Have I plucked my eyebrows? No, I can naturally move them independently.
Oh my God, yeah, you can.
Amazing. When he wants
like
to.
Spock.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Spock. So the problem is that all award ceremonies essentially are quite boring, right, for the general public. If you're not a real TV nerd like we all are, obviously, on the Pilot TV podcast, and all our listeners are, then you're like, well, why am I watching this thing? You know, who cares about so-and-so, best documentary, blah, blah, blah. And you have to do like 29 categories, I think there were. So what happens is, and particularly British TV thinks that it's too boring, and to get people to get ratings, to get people to watch, they need to get stars on, you need to get as much star quality as you can. That's why we do all the backstage interviews, like, you know, celebrities and famous people, and basically that's where they relegate, you know, like for example, the Writers Awards don't even make it into
this show.
But it's all the fuzzy thinking. And if I was in charge, which maybe one day I will be.
Oh, my God.
Boyd, if Boyd was in charge of this after stopping being in charge of the Eurovision Song Contest, which you should also be in charge of.
When I've stopped being executive producer of Eurovision and moved on to the BAFTAs.
This is Boyd's world and we're just living in it.
Yeah, I would just make the point that just remember your core audience, the people watching this thing. They're not watching it to see a glimpse of Kate Winslet. They're watching it to see who wins these awards, if they're vaguely interested, right?
There is an argument that the kind of people that they think are going to be bored are not watching this anymore.
They're watching it. They're watching, you know, ITV, basically.
The backstage interviews were really excruciating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought the fact that so many awards were just sort of like swept under the carpet of like, oh, and also given out, I thought it was outrageous.
And you know what the irony is? Well, not even the irony. You know what the interesting thing is that the Oscars, year after year, and I know ratings dip, I think they went up this year actually, but the Oscars year after year, it's pretty much the second highest rated show on American TV every year is the Oscars. Tens of millions of people watch it, second only to the Super Bowl, basically. And they're not, you know, American, Midwestern Americans aren't like, you know, don't give a shit about best documentary and best luck, but they show, famously last year was the first time they ever didn't show every single Oscar, no matter how, you know, technical it was live on the show. Last year, they got rid of some of them, remember, famously, and everyone was furious, and they reinstalled them this year. So it's like if the entire American public can sit through 4 hours of the Oscars every year and not be furious that they're getting to see who won Best Cinematography, then surely the BAFTAs, of all people,
because they
can
showing,
show the whole thing,
they are
preferably live,
the films and not edit.
Yeah, and not be obsessed with getting backstage, 2 minutes backstage.
Oh
with.
My gosh, James, I kind of want you to have watched it. Like, maybe I'll just send you a clip, clips to watch. It was excruciating.
Anyway, that's my annual.
Is there anything else this week that Boyd you should be in charge of? I mean, if you want to take over hosting this podcast, I mean, go for it.
I mean, you know.
I mean, I would vote
we'll
for
see how you do.
Boyd's like, I've got notes.
We'll see how you do. Yeah. Well, should we talk separately about the winners in the news? Yeah.
Yes, okay, we'll go through that in news. We'll go through that in news. Even though it's not news, it was over
James,
a week ago. But
I've got one more thing. No, I'm joking.
Bet you have. Mm-hmm. I'll
no,
bet
I haven't.
You have.
I'm done.
I thought you had.
No.
Okay.
Boydie, anything you'd like to share?
Well, I don't know if you watch Eurovision, but I'm joking. What have I been watching? Yes, I wrote notes to remind myself what I've been watching.
This is a new thing.
Yeah, I mean, I take notes on my iPhone everywhere, because otherwise I forget. You've covered it pretty much. I was going to talk about the BAFTAs there. Of course, the other thing you didn't mention about the BAFTAs before the winners is that, of course, I was there for the dinner and party.
Sorry, I forgot to mention that. What was I thinking?
And I spoke
that should have been absolutely top of my list. Guys, I watched the BAFTAs and I just want to let you know, Boyd was there.
I was there, and after I went to Arsenal, I was there for the dinner and party afterwards. And of course, I spoke to Ramesh Ranganathan and congratulated him on his triumphant co-hosting of the awards. And we had an extensive discussion about whether to wear trainers with your suit or not, which he then discussed on his own podcast. James.
Did you wear trainers with your suit?
Yes.
What trainers were they?
They were my white Comme des Garçons Supreme collab trainers.
Oh, of course they were.
James, right? He is totally underplaying this because Wolf and Owl is our favourite podcast, apart from this one, obviously, and I'm being generous. Uh-huh. But like Wolf and Owl is our favourite podcast. And Tom Davis and Ramesh Ranganathan talked for, I'm not joking, 5 minutes at the end of their podcast, just about Boyd.
About Boyd's trainers.
And his fashion sense, and his, like, the fact that, is it Tom? Tom has never seen, no, Rom has never seen you in the same pair of trainers. Mm. Honestly, it was like a, it was like.
Did they plug the podcast?
God, no.
Did they say Boyd Hilton of the Pilot TV podcast?
I don't think
Boyd,
so.
Boyd, if you're going to have famous friends, if you are going to hobnob with the elites, can you at the very least get them to do some basic marketing for us?
But this is what I was going to come on to say. That wasn't, so this was one of the most amazing moments of my life to hear, you know, I didn't know they'd hear them talking about me.
It was
my
incredible.
Trainer's suit combo on their podcast. But equally, I'm not exaggerating, at least 6 or 7 people, all TV industry, crucial TV industry insiders.
Commented on your trainers?
No. Commented on the podcast.
Oh, our podcast?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Complimented us on the podcast. 3 or 4 of them said they were also subscribers. And
yes.
A plus.
Shut
and they were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, amazing. One of them made the point that it was too cheap. And I said, yeah, we are going to raise the price.
What, as in the quality of the podcast or just what we charge?
What we charge. They're like, $1.99 a month. You should be charging way more than that.
And thank this was
like
that. A top That's good level. To know.
This was a celebrity producer, guy who kind of, you know.
Can afford it, yes.
Find celebrities to go on TV. I was like, yeah, we should really be charging more. Yeah, absolute lot of acclaim.
That's amazing. Yeah. Boyd, when they said that to you, please say that you also said, have you put a review up?
Yeah, have you given us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts?
I leave that to you two. I never check that thing.
How many of them work for ITV?
A couple work for ITV.
And yet still listen to the podcast. Oh, bless you. I love
absolutely.
You all.
Oh, that's so patronizing. James, what? No, bless you.
No, bless you for overlooking my egregious wrong opinions about your channel.
Yeah, at least he's getting them wrong.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're very adult about it. One of them was Danny Brocklehurst. He thanked us for our review, even though you didn't like his show that much, James. He was very, very mature about it. No, he was great.
But he hates me. Good. That's good to know.
He's very, he's
Maybe
lovely.
We should have a James shit list.
It would be too long. Yeah. We don't have that kind of time.
So Danny listens to the podcast regularly. Yeah. Great man. Absolutely lovely man. One of the great writers. So it was, it was amazing. Seriously, like to have that number of people saying that completely, you know. I mean, 2 of them literally went up to me to tell me that. Yeah, it was fun. It was incredible. So yeah, it was a great night. Anyway.
Oh, good. Yeah. But next time when you speak to famouses, please ask them to plug the podcast on whatever it is they're doing. That would be great.
Oh, but these are like TV industry, these are, you know, writers. Like Danny, what's Danny Brocklehurst going to do? He's not going to...
It would kill him the next thing he's writing. Would it kill him to have a couple of people listening to the Pilot TV podcast? When something goes down.
Yeah.
Like,
enough.
I'm just saying that thing, it would be organic, it would feel natural. I think that's great. Yeah, okay. That's a great idea.
Maybe. And finally, in my weekly pre-spoiler special Succession slot, because I've watched the penultimate episode now.
Oh, you big bastard.
No spoilers. Yeah.
Boyd.
Well, like, 2 things. One is it's extra long. It's around 75 minutes in length. So we knew last week I revealed that the finale is going to be like 90 minutes, I think, feature length special. This one is 75 minutes, which is basically also feature length, really, because there's plenty of films that are only 75 minutes. So, and it's the funeral. We laugh for that. Well, I've explained how long a feature is.
No, I just enjoyed. No, go on.
Okay.
It's the funeral.
It's the funeral.
Oh, God.
It is.
Did you cry?
I welled up at one point, yeah. And not,
oh, wow.
Yeah, for unexpected reasons, is all I'd say. And again, without spoiling anything, Roman has the most astonishing sequence in this episode.
Oh, no, because he's going to have some kind of breakdown. I mean, he's already sort of in the midst of a just long breakdown post-death.
Not saying anything more.
Oh, God, he doesn't fall into the grave, does he?
Not saying... I'm not going to spoil it, but I can confirm he doesn't fall into the grave. They haven't gone all like sitcom, 70s sitcom.
Is this the one that airs as we record this Sunday?
Sunday 2 a.m., Monday 9 p.m.
It's fine. So people listening to this podcast will conceivably have already seen it.
Yes.
Therefore, will not be calling for your blood. Okay, good.
No, I've just said Roman is an amazing secret.
Do you know what? I genuinely believe with a show like this, even revealing the runtime is probably the kind of thing that could get you killed these days. People are very sensitive.
Like, if someone comes to Boyd about the runtime, I will throw myself in front of you.
Okay, we'll go full angry ferret on them.
I'm saying, look, you've got 15 more minutes than usual of Succession.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good news.
Confirming that Roman didn't fall into the grave is a bit of a spoiler, but
maybe I'm double bluffing. Maybe he did fall into the grave.
I'm very confused.
But what the other thing, so I think...
Anyway, for more on this, for actual spoilers, do subscribe to Pilot Plus for apparently the incredibly cheap price of $1.99 a month.
And just to say, we are not going to get to see us TV critics. Is that a pompous word?
A little bit.
Podcasters, TV journalists, twats. Hacks, yeah. Twats.
Yeah, twats better.
We're not going to get. We're not going to get to see the finale though. In advance,
the finale.
The finale.
Will we get to see the finale?
You know what? That was a cross between final episode and finale, and it came out as finale.
Do you know what? I've really cheered up.
Been no good, yeah.
But it doesn't matter because we record Pilot Plus. We'll record it after it's actually aired, so we'll be fine.
The finale will have been over.
That's true. But I mean, you don't get to get this slot where I talk about where I do a free...
No, no, when you get to ruin it for everyone beforehand, that will not happen for the finale.
It's a free spoiler.
Listen, it's not a spoiler thing. He just likes to brag that he's seen it.
It's true.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Did you watch it with Ramesh Ranganathan? While wearing your trainers?
That would be funny.
I did not. No, that would be amazing. Okay. I mean, he can come around if he wants to and watch it,
yeah.
But no.
Okay.
Yeah, that is what I've been watching.
Oh, God, I guess we have to ask him, don't we?
You do have to ask me.
James, what have you been watching?
Well, okay, it's funny you should ask. So, a few things. Obviously, we have been watching Yellow Jackets because we've been spoiling this week by week on Pilot Plus. Kate is now out. She is completely
out.
Done with
Absolutely
Yellow Jackets. Suffice it to say, it's gone a bit mental. But if you want to hear more about that than Pilot Plus, we also spoiled...
More about that. You're up finally. You can...
See, boy, but the thing is, because I get to edit bits, I can fix that in post. But then I could not fix your bit. See, that would be...
James.
If I make lots of recurring jokes about it,
that's true. That is true.
I'm going to do it as well.
Genuinely, that is times when I've tried to cut stuff out and I can't because it's become a running thing.
Yeah, so, every time you make a mistake, let's get into the habit of doing that. Just bringing it up a few times.
No, please do that. So also Ted Lasso. We did spoiler on Ted Lasso on last week's Pilot Plus as well. So that's fun. Enjoying Ted Lasso. Only two episodes left. Okay, but let's get into what I've actually been watching. So as you know, I am watching Barry. I am now into the third season of Barry. So we've started the descent into darkness. I'm about halfway through season three. And I just want to say, the season two episode entitled Ronnie/Lily may be one of the greatest episodes of TV I've ever seen.
What happens in that one? I'm not quite remembering the title episode.
Ronnie/Lily.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
brilliant. It involves a little girl in a taekwondo outfit.
Yes.
And that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds a bit wrong.
No, it's not. No, it's genuine. It's almost like a standalone episode. Like, you could almost watch it in isolation from the rest of the show. It is absolutely deranged, but complete chaotic genius. It's incredibly quotable. It's incredibly funny. I genuinely watched it. This is... absolute genius from end to end. I thought it was just extraordinary. And so even if you don't watch any more of Barry, go and watch season two episode Ronnie/Lily, and it's marvellous. So that was the highlight of my watching this week.
Whenever you mention your rewatch of Barry, it reminds me that I keep forgetting to mention that I am watching Barry live.
You are. You're watching it live, whereas I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah, so Monday's episode, which was the sixth of this series, was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I've got like a couple of weeks to catch up. I will do, because they're relatively short seasons. But yes, very much enjoying Barry. The Power finished, season one finale aired, which I did enjoy, but it still hasn't been renewed for season two. There is still no...
ominous.
Yeah, there's been ominous silence from Amazon. Mm. We've heard nothing from them. I've got to be honest, guys, if you're willing to spunk 300 million on fucking Citadel, I think you can afford to give me a second season.
You see, it's not me who wants to be in charge.
Power.
If you were in charge
if I was
video,
in charge of Amazon, if I was Jeff Bezos, I'll tell you this, I would 100% renew The Expanse. But I would also put a second season of The Power on
and
TV.
And how about they axe that Lord of the Rings thing instead?
No, I like Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, even if it costs like $1 billion an episode. Yes. So The Power, will we get the rest of it? Will we not? Who knows? But I think it's really good, and I think it's a great show, so can we please have that back? But more than anything else, I watched an episode of a reality show this week.
Oh my God. What the fuck?
I watched the first episode of Naked Attraction.
Oh my God, James, what the fuck?
I was not expecting him to say that.
Dirty, dirty bastard.
Yeah. Of all the things, and also...
He makes out like he's doing, like, you know, some, like, classic reality TV. He goes
Is this not classic reality TV? I suppose, is it even reality TV? It's more of a game show, isn't it?
No, it's
just you staring at some naked bodies.
It's factual entertainment.
Well, I don't know what you describe it as. I don't even know what the genre is.
It's a fact-dense format.
It's a fact-dense format.
Fact-ent.
Fact-ent. Okay, sorry. I don't know all the lingo.
Wait, what? what led you to this
yes.
moment?
Yes, and also, I love the fact, by the way, that you started episode one. Like it's a story,
look,
a narrative.
Guys, you know how I am with TV shows. Yeah. You've got to start at the beginning because the narrative journey is important. Yeah. So, no, this came about because I was on YouTube, and you know the little side column on YouTube?
What the fuck's happening
And it shows you things... I don't know, connected to it.
PornTube.
Yes, I was on Pornhub. No, I was on YouTube and it came up, like, because there are full episodes on YouTube, and it had one of the episodes came out. I don't think it was the first one that came out. And I was like, oh, and I went to click on it. I was like, oh, no, got to find the first one. So I sat down. I thought, oh, I'm going to watch the first episode of Naked Attraction. Now, I didn't watch the whole thing because it's like an hour long.
I feel so uncomfortable.
I watched the beginning of it because it's split into two segments, right? Like you have two quote-unquote contestants each week. Is this how it works?
Yep.
Yeah. Don't pretend you haven't watched the full
episode. I've never watched it before. So you guys have watched this show, right? How many episodes have you seen?
89.
69,
are,
surely.
By the way, there are a lot of episodes of it, because it's now on, I think it's like 12 series.
Well, these are the questions that I have, because I kind of feel like once you've seen one episode, you've seen everything.
To be fair, I've only watched a couple, but carry on.
So the first one was like, it was a girl looking at men's penises, essentially. And I was unprepared for the level of detailed anatomical commentary that came with it. I mean, it's quite extraordinary.
It's very,
it really is.
People will be very brave to go on that show.
Who's the host? Who's the...
Anna Richardson.
I mean, fair play to us. The questions she asks.
Yeah.
I was like, fucking hell.
I mean, what I'd say, she's brilliant.
She keeps it going. Like, really, you know.
I think she deserves a lot of kudos.
I was impressed.
Because I don't think there's hardly anyone else who could deal with that format, you know, and keep it kind of, and the balance between it being lascivious and, you know, and it being quasi-educational.
Well, this is the question I have for you. So the very first episode has a girl looking at guys and then a girl who's bisexual looking at girls and guys.
Yeah.
So, and in the first one, like, the girl is looking at the guy saying, oh, you know, this guy, his balls hang a bit low. I'm not really liking about this. And like, she's like, again, this kind of thing.
Honestly,
thanks for the example.
I was like, oh, this is quite funny. But then I thought, oh, hang on a minute. If this was a guy looking at girls, then I feel like the tone of this would be very, very different and it would feel a bit ew, right?
Mm. But they do it the other way around.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they do, but I didn't get to see that bit because it wasn't in that episode.
They're less kind of critical like that.
Because I was like, because then that feels really icky.
Yeah.
Like, you call it a double standard if you will, but it feels quite objectifying. But so the second one, it was another girl, but she was looking at both girls. And she was really, I thought she actually was really good because she was completely upfront, forward, completely. And again, just leaned really into it. And the commentary of what she was saying, I was just like, oh my God. But what I didn't realize is that the person looking at the naked bodies then has to also get naked walk out naked. And then the piece of sheep, and then literally stand in front of her, glance her up and down, and do a live commentary of her naked body.
Yeah.
It's just
terrifying.
I love James explaining the plot of Naked Attraction is not, I have to say, is not what I was expecting from this week's podcast.
He never fails to surprise me.
This is like in Illinois. This isn't even part of the cultural exchange. He just took it upon himself.
I was fascinated by the concept.
Deep dive into Naked Attraction.
No, but also he made up this whole backstory of like, oh, I was on YouTube.
I mean, what you should have asked, Kate, is what were you actually searching for that this came up in things you might also be interested in?
Exactly. That's why I did not ask you, because I do not want to know the answer.
It was The Expanse. I found it fascinating. But if you'll pardon the pun, the longevity of this, you've got a question. Because I feel like, again, like once you've seen one episode, you've kind of seen them all, right? Like, what has it got to offer after that?
It's like saying once you see one Eurovision Song Contest, you've seen them all.
But they're different songs, right? Yes, there are different genitals. Okay, I get what you're saying. But how much variety can there really be? You
know,
how much variety can there really be?
I mean, a lot.
Yeah. Everybody's different.
Open your mind, James.
Perhaps there is a lot more variety. I mean, I must admit, there was more commentary on the length of pubic hair than I was entirely comfortable with in my television viewing.
I don't think I can handle you watching anymore, and I'd like to, on behalf of Boyd and I, ask you not to watch anymore.
On behalf of the world.
I will not watch anymore Naked Attraction.
Also, there are lots of different combinations, because you can have bisexual men, trans people.
Oh my God, I don't even want to go through all the different things you can see, and I was like, please, let's
I've just explained enough.
But the host whose name was, I've forgotten.
Anna Richardson
was literally asking her, so what kind of vaginas do you go for? And so she's literally describing her ideal vagina to her. I was like, is this good television?
It's like a night out with a pub for you.
Very hard to tell.
Right, we've got a call back. We've got a call back to that because he's going to definitely try and take this out. I'm not going to cut that out. I'm going to leave it in.
It's all fine.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I genuinely think Anna Richardson is brilliant, though. She's fantastic.
I will grant you that.
The spin-off. I've mentioned.
It's a spin-off of Naked Education.
Yes.
Thing. Okay.
That's the spin-off. She co-hosts with other people, but she's fantastic. She's brilliant at talking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So good. So my television education is continuing apace, is what we're saying. What next for me? Who knows?
I don't know. God, it's like mind-boggling what you might watch next.
Yeah, but it felt like because we've talked about this before, because I've said to you, I can't get my head around the fact that Naked Attraction is a show that exists. And I couldn't even imagine what. So I almost felt like I needed to see it to understand what it was.
Do you believe it exists now?
I do believe it exists now.
It's actually been an incredibly successful format because it's been exported to loads of countries.
I wonder why.
Yeah, loads of countries. Yeah, there's a Russian version, I know that. Because they did a special once on like the different international versions. Yeah,
international genitals.
Like.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
A world tour, if you will.
Yeah. In many ways, it is a bit superficial, but that's neither here nor there.
Please let us move away.
Should we move on from what we've been watching or whose genitals we've been looking at?
Speak what comes for yourself.
Let's get on then to this week's listener question, which I will point out, I gave you in advance so you could prepare. Benevolent soul that I am. So you must be pretty psyched about that. You didn't prepare, did you?
Yeah. What I would say is you were very good this week because you did send it to us in advance. I have a good answer? I don't think so.
Well, shall I read out the question first?
Yes.
Okay. The question comes from Annika Ruff and it is, what is the most underrated, brackets or greatest hidden gem, show on each major streaming platform? For example, for Apple TV Plus, I would say Defending Jacob. If Boyd suggests, I would suggest that the OA is not underrated as it has a huge fan following. So there you go, Boydie, the OA is exempt.
You've been told.
Yeah.
You have totally been told. I haven't prepared for this one at all. So
I've had a busy day looking at naked people in Naked Attraction. Yeah.
All right. What have you got? What have you got for me?
Mine, well, I'm just going to go first because mine are not good.
You may not have answered the question accurately in that case.
Oh, yeah.
Carry on.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally haven't. You know what I've done is I've just taken the kernel of the idea and I've run with it. These are old shows, but at the time I remember like Schitt's Creek felt like a hidden gem at the time when I discovered it in lockdown.
No. I'm sorry.
No, James, it did. It felt like a hidden gem. I mean, to be fair, you had to give it a few episodes before you got into
Bridgerton?
It.
Bridgerton? Is that like a hidden gem?
You 100% cannot go back in time to before massively successful shows were massively successful.
Okay, all right, fine. Even though you're being a pedant, fine. Better Things. BBC, Pamela Adlon Louis.
Yeah. Although,
is that a hidden gem?
I think that's a bit, yeah.
Thanks, Boyd.
No, she's talking about streamers, though, isn't she? But I guess iPlayer. Yeah, iPlayer. That's fine. No,
So are we saying that is the best thing on iPlayer that people don't necessarily watch? Do you think that's the best hidden gem? Okay.
I think it's one of them. Okay. I would completely.
Are we settling on that? What were the other? Any other contenders?
Yeah, Netflix. I'm going to go for Archive 81.
Oh, yes.
Which was it was like a horror drama thing. It was about like this weird video cassette. It had like, it was very moody and atmospheric, quite slow burn, which is why it was axed after one season, clearly. But it was a really good, like culty, mystery, drama, supernatural horror thing. And on Prime Video, which I mentioned before, I think we've had a question very much like this.
Well, we definitely had questions like if you could like recommend one show on each streaming service. And I think this was for Annika's mum. So it's just like, it's a variation on her old question. But
on Prime Video, @ Amazon Prime Video, as it's often known, I'm going for Homecoming. which was the show created by Sam Esmail, various shows that he created before, including Mr. Robot. That's what he's most famous for. And Homecoming star Julia Roberts.
I was going to say, it's good that you've chosen like a really low profile, like non-star power show that no one's heard of.
Have you heard of it, Kate? No, and he's in one of those moons.
Right, okay. Just to be fair, you know, well, Janelle Monáe was in season two.
She was. Ooh. I mean, I know it's incredible to think, considering that star power, but actually it did kind of go by the wayside, I feel. I didn't really punch through and achieve cultural significance. But I particularly the first series, I really, really like the first series. So yes, that would be my choice for Prime Video.
Not, you know, The Expanse or anything like that.
Oh, God, no. Okay. No. I'll leave that up to you.
That's fine.
Especially if I know, but this
is a communal pilot list. We are feeding into this as a kind of hive mind.
But Apple TV, you will agree with me on this one.
Go on.
What's the best cult?
C, obviously.
Servant.
Servant, I mean, I would argue more people have seen Servant than have seen C.
I don't know if that's true.
Do you know what? You may be right, because I've watched C enough for 100 people.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, you might be right. And Servant is very... I mean, but then Defending Jacob isn't a bad shout either, because I don't think anyone watched that.
But again, that was good star power. That had a big star.
Because Chris Evans in it.
Yes. Yeah. And it does show you that, you know, there's something about certain shows that don't attract public attention particularly.
Well, I mean, in many ways, you could pick anything from Apple, because I don't think that many people subscribe to it. And you could argue they're all hidden gems to a certain extent.
We'll say The Morning Show.
with not hidden gems.
Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, Ted Lasso, that lesser known series.
But Servant genuinely annoys me, in fact, the extent to which people don't know Servant. And I mean, it's basically M. Night Shyamalan's best thing. So,
well, other than Unbreakable, but yes.
All Sixth Sense. It should have been on the Empire's recent M. Night Shyamalan's Best Things. What's it called, that thing?
The Ranking. Yes. There you go. It would have been on the ranking, but unfortunately, being TV, it is disqualified because Chris Hewitt is a fascist who doesn't watch television.
Right. You said it, yeah.
Yes.
You said it, baby.
Indeed. We did a recent ranking for Julia Roberts, and I mentioned, among other things, Homecoming, and indeed the episode of Friends where she plays Susie Underpants, and they were both disqualified on account of being television.
Terrible.
Yes.
What are your choices, James?
Well, we're supposed to be collaborating on choices as we go.
Decided because you haven't thought up your own one.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's piggybacking.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm piggybacking on yours. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to stage an intervention here. Just based on the fact that, as we record, we don't have that much time left because Kay has a dinner appointment.
Oh, well, you won't blame me all on Kay. Brilliant.
So, James, because of Kay, because of her great social life,
snake.
We have limited time. So
you're such a shit.
I have to get home because Naked Attraction is on.
Of course.
That's more like the reason.
That's more like the truth.
So, unfortunately, Annika, we're going to have to cut your question short. I'm sure we will come back to the other streaming services.
Let it be known for the record that I answered and Boyd answered.
Yes. Okay, anyway, that was part of a question. If you would like part of your question answered, please do send them in to us at Pilot TV Pod via DM on Instagram or Twitter, or to me at James C. Dyer on Instagram only. Shall we move on to... Oh, I think we should have our guests. Should we have our guests?
Yes.
Let's have this week's guests. You know them as Ashley and Gordon, adoptive owners of Colin from Accounts. Kay knows them as her new besties. As you'll already know, Kay tracked down the pair despite their best efforts to evade her and remain anonymous. And here's the result of that encounter. Here is Kay stalking Patrick Bramall and Harriet Dyer. No relation.
Harry and Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kay.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for sparing the time. I know possibly there are sore heads around late night last night.
It was late.
I've had a sore head than this.
I think we're running on adrenaline though, because it was such a rush to be at the BAFTAs, and then the after party was where we met some of the most kind of interesting, kind of influential people of all the night. And I almost didn't go because we've got a wee one and we had press this morning, but we're like, let's go. And we're so glad we did. We made some amazing connections. The BBC was so nice to us, and you know, we've met some really cool people.
Yeah.
Who did you meet?
Well, I don't know anyone's name.
I took down all of these. The head of this, the head of that. But I mean, the actors
as well.
We're on the red carpet, and Imelda Staunton stopped us, took us by the hand, and was like, I'm Imelda Staunton. I just want to say, I love Gollum from Accounts.
And she was so funny. What? Yes.
Mate, she was.
Oh my God.
And
come
she's
on.
Like, this is my husband, Jim. And he was like, oh my God, it's Colin. They were the most adorable. They were like bigger fans than my parents.
It was massive.
Shut up.
And we've got a photo of us on the red carpet with like all the photographers going, Imelda, Imelda, over here. And she's pointing at us, going, do you know that? They're Colin from Accounts.
That is amazing. It was, surely that's to go on all the posters.
Yeah, yeah, it blew our mind.
It was a rush. It was so cool because we were kind of wondering if we'd be a bit of a shag on a rock here. We weren't sure. We'd heard that it had gone well. We'd had good reviews and things. But, like, we spent all day the day before kind of – like exploring the area where we're staying, and we weren't, it's not like we were mobbed by any means.
We kept making a joke when we landed. We're like, no one was looking at us. We're like, yes, it's us, God.
Do you have your sunglasses on?
No, we took everything off.
Do you know what was
shirts,
so funny?
Trousers.
We were standing in front of this very old pub. And we were drinking a beer with our baby and Pat
the lamb and flag.
The lamb and flag.
Oh yeah, that's
yeah. Yeah. So she's old. And Pat goes, oh. We've got a fan.
Someone's taking
and
a photo.
And I was like, what? Right. He went, they've taken a photo. And I kind of looked over and then more people were taking photo. And then I realized everyone's taking a picture of the pub. We're standing in front of the pub, which has a beautiful, you know, visage or what's that word? The front thing?
Yeah,
Facade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Similar. They were taking a picture of that. And then it I went and talked
to one of the staff and I said, is this quite a famous pub? She went, Yeah, it's famous. Dickens drank here. It's 400 years old this year. It's like, yeah, okay, they weren't taking photos of us.
But guys, you've got to make the most of it because give it a few weeks, months even.
Yeah.
Like, and you're just going to be mobbed. So you need to make the most of it so you can do your sightseeing now.
Totally. Before people get annoyed.
Okay, good.
Yeah. People like me. Anyway, first question straight out of the traps.
Go.
Where is Colin?
Oh, great question.
I thought it'd be wheeled out, like some squeaky wheels.
Well, he's an able-bodied dog. So
First disappointment.
Yeah, no. So he would walk out. But he lives on like a farm in New South Wales,
I think.
He
lives a very happy life.
His owner's like 11.
Yes.
And but he's a trained theatrical animal.
He's
and
a good
he
boy.
Was such
is
a
he?
Oh,
I was gonna ask, like, what was it first of all, what was the process of choosing him? Because he is the perfect dog for this role.
Thank you. We were offered some fancier dogs and we were like, nah.
We're given sort of a flip book of dogs and we're like, you've got to believe this dog would get out and it didn't have a microchip, didn't have a collar, so it's not a fancy dog.
You want a bit of scruffy dog.
Scruffy dog.
We were saying we wanted the everyman of dogs.
Yeah.
So we were offered pugs and
dog next door.
And sausage exactly. dogs and, you know. And
like a pug could not be more wrong.
Yeah.
A French bulldog could not be more
they're
wrong.
They're too fashionable and cool.
Too cute. Two TVs. So we're like, we need a scruffy dog here. And we picked it not knowing that it was a Border Terrier, which is
we thought it was a mutt, but it's just it's
that's how they look. That's
yeah.
And the BT community, as they're known, has blown up. And apparently, anyone walking a Border Terrier right now gets people going, "It's gone!" all the time, and they're like,
you've
"Yes,
basically
we know."
It's kind of the equivalent of Lassie. Now you've done that for terriers.
Yes. I think we've done that for the Border Terrier community at large.
Yeah. Hashtag who's Lassie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Let's make a trend.
Yeah.
So what's Colin's real name?
Zach.
Okay, there was a second.
Without a K, just ZAC, just in case you're wondering.
There was a second Colin. There were two. We had a backup and his name was Buster.
Uh-huh.
And he was slightly cuter than Zach.
Don't say it. We've got it. But he did a bit.
He was
the dog in the opening that opened the gate.
Yeah. Because you need to be quite skilled for that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, actually, you know what? Buster is apparently less skilled, but we'd shaved Zach's back to make it look like he'd had that surgery stuff. And he had like a big shaved patch. And that thing with the gate was one of the last things we shot.
Yeah.
And his fur hadn't grown back. So, of course, we needed Buster. But Buster's kind of like.
But also, Buster wasn't so au fait with the wheels.
Yeah,
so he could just trot along. Oh, hey.
These dogs are interesting.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I mean, they say don't work with kids and dogs, and yet you've chosen to do just that.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was a kid as well in at four, and she, you know.
So Zach took instruction very well.
Very well.
Now, have you seen Zach since, like, because I was wondering. Because Colin's blown up, right? The TV show rather than the actual dog. And
is this
like,
breaking news? Colin's blown up everywhere.
No. And everyone's loving it. But I've just wondered, like, if he's going to turn into a diva. Like, Colin could potentially turn into a dick because he gets so famous. So
do you think,
has he changed?
They could really.
They could really hold out on us.
They could really have us over a barrel for his fee for season two.
They could really jack it up.
We haven't been greenlit officially.
Yeah.
But we feel like one's probably coming. But they could suddenly go, I don't know. Have you got 10K a week?
But you know what, Zach, if you're listening, I've been following stuff on Twitter and people are going, my dog looks just like Colin. And I'm like, yeah he does.
Imminently replaceable. We thought we were getting a mutt and we thought these two mutts just happened to look the same, Buster and Zach. And then we've Googled border terrier and gone, oh, dime a dozen.
It's a classic look.
It's a whole vibe.
Yeah. That's showbiz, kid.
Doggy dog.
Yeah, it's a dog. Doggy dog world.
So tell me, how did who came up with this genius premise?
We actually can't remember.
Are you just saying that because it might get awkward?
No, I think it's me.
Well, Harry thinks it's her. Like,
I think
which
it might
is,
be
which
you,
is, which
and
is,
I've heard you make
how
me.
Dare you? We think it might be her, but honestly, I have a terrible memory. Like, genuinely, there's no doubt Harry wrote the first script. She wrote the first draft of the first, and it's the first thing she's ever written. And it was like,
shut up!
Oh, mate,
that makes me hate you a little bit. That's ridiculous. That's your first attempt. Your first,
not even so much as a short story.
What a dick move!
Oh my god!
Nothing since year 12.
Yeah, smug.
I didn't mean to be smug, sorry.
Yeah.
Wow. So we'll say that you thought of the concept. We're just going to go with that,
okay,
maybe.
Let's go with that.
And then you wrote the first script, and then how did it go from there? Did you then write the rest together?
I don't know, Harry. Did you write the rest together?
I wrote it all. I've been carrying you your whole life. Yeah. No, he wrote up two, and then I wrote up three, and then here. And so we did odds and evens, but then anytime we finished it, we passed it to the other person, and they'd do a pass on it. So they're all Frankensteins between the both of us by the end of it. But we have solo credits, like, just because we thought it would be cleaner to say, I wrote four, he wrote four. It might help us get other work or something.
That's right.
I really didn't want, as a female and as my first job, I didn't want people to go, it's written by Patrick Bramall and Harriet Dyer.
No.
How much of that was just Patrick Bramall? Because he is an established writer in Australia and America. I didn't want people to think it was like a 75-25 proposition.
Yeah.
So I wanted some solo credits.
So we've gone the other way. We've really
gone the other way. Because now this is all I'm going to talk about. Like, this is amazing.
I'll just start being the toilet if you guys just want to chat.
This is really cool, though. The first time you've written something and this is a result.
Yeah.
And now is obviously a collaboration and a joint effort, but still amazing.
Incredible. Like, annoyingly good, this script.
I mean, listen, I find it annoying too, but still, we've got to give credit where it's due.
So
is it, how much of this, if any, is autobiographical?
All of it, 100%. No, very little. I think we've bowerbirded a lot of stuff from our lives, from behaviours, and sort of, you know, there's no one person in it who's based on a real character. I mean, we used our own faces and bodies for this. We insisted on that sort of authenticity. But the banter
between... We were going to AI it, but we just,
In the end, we put that money towards the dog. But I think the banter between us is something that's, you know, very real, and that's from us.
Yeah.
But in terms of the story, there's no one character based on a person. There's behaviours, there's incidences, there's words and lines and things that when you put them all together, that makes Linnell or that makes Kiara. You know what I mean? And there's stuff like Harry has a dear friend who's a doctor, and we took a lot of her horrendous doctor stories and put them in it, you know, with
the stitching
up all the vaginas.
Actually, she peed in the drawer as well, and that was out of the hospital. Yeah,
that was not in the medical.
But she's given me a wealth of stuff as a student doctor. She's now, you know, a family GP, and she's incredible at what she does. But she, you know, she pricked her finger in the whole situation. They had to, and like the mum was
God,
like, I
just
had
just
a
totally
baby. No, and she's like, we have to check for Hep B and Hep C and all this stuff. Yeah. But it's like everyone kind of says, oh my God, is Linnell basically your mum? Because she's such a mum. And she's not. My mum is like.
She's not like Linnell at all.
No, but there's flavors. Like, I remember I started doing therapy and mum was like, you don't need boundaries, that kind of thing, which is one of her lines. Like, there's flavors of my mum, but it's mostly like just an amalgamation of all my friends' mums and also fiction, just pure fiction.
Yeah.
It's kind of a relief to know that Lee isn't based on one person.
Actually.
Oh, no, don't
anyone,
say it.
Of anyone.
He's actually a guy.
That dream he has that he.
Wait,
says,
so I can tell if you're joking.
No, not joking.
That dream is pretty much verbatim of a man told me that dream and I was alone in a car with him and it was.
Oh my God.
Yucky.
Yeah.
Locks down.
He picked me up because he was my. I had like a. I was doing a TV show in Vancouver and they give you a driver because you work such long hours. I don't want you driving into a pole and being tired. So they pick you up, right? And it's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's like snowy and dark outside and his name is Lee. I hope he's not listening. And I said,
or if you are,
we
mate,
have a lot of listeners.
Learn the
so
lesson.
You never know.
I said, Lee, how'd you sleep? And he goes, amazing. And I was like, oh, geez.
No, Lee, no.
What's happening here is I had the most amazing dream. And then he basically said verbatim that dream. And I was like, I haven't fully started my career as a writer at this point, but I think we'd written the pilot. I'd written the pilot. I think we had maybe two done. And I thought, I don't know where this fits. Lee wasn't a person yet.
Yeah.
And I turned into like brain glue mode and I just got every word. And then as soon as you dropped me off, I ran to my trailer and they're like, they need your makeup. And I was like, I've just got to get this down. And I basically wrote out the dream on my phone.
Oh my God. I can't believe that's actually come out of the mouth of a human. Like, it's just
And alone with a young woman.
Yeah.
And like, I'm blonde and he's like this beautiful blonde. It's just like, what are you saying to me, bro? Because you pick me up and drop me off by yourself in all these weird locations and I don't like this.
Yeah, and you know where I'm staying and this is really weird.
Yeah. And so
he was a cool guy. But I miss him.
It's either a good time or a good story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And there's other things like, you know, stuff that we've sort of extrapolated on, like Gordon's cancer storyline. There's no cancer, but I had some medical issues as a kid. It was like, oh, well, that kind of serves out that, you know. And there's like the gambling thing. It's like from someone we know, you know, and gambling in Australia is a massive problem with, particularly with young men. And it's you know, it's, the advertising.
It's huge.
It's out of control.
And so that's something we planted, but it didn't pay off. But we want in season two, if we get one, like to kind of extrapolate on that. And even if we don't get to it, maybe we get another, like, what we wanted to do was plant enough seeds that we would have some fertile kind of stuff coming up, because I like that you've created these characters and you haven't cleaned it all up. And so someone might watch it and be like, oh, you've got him playing pokies like once and you've got him playing poker like once. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Should we care? And what we want is that for that to pay off later.
Yeah.
It doesn't all have to clean up in the first season series.
And so in terms of that, like you sort of mentioned, will there be a second season?
We hope so.
I think there kind of has to be.
We'd be pretty surprised if not.
But we haven't got the green light yet.
It'll come.
But you're all lined up with the ideas. You know where that's
going. We've got lots of ideas.
It's very sad. Like the guy who commissioned it passed away a couple of months ago, Brian Walsh. He's an amazing,
legendary man.
Huge, like a king of television in America. Australia. Where am I? We're in the UK. We live in America. We're talking about Australia. He passed away. It was incredibly suddenly. It's very sad. We have his picture printed out above our Colin from Accounts poster in our little writing room. And that might be slowing things down a little because he's in charge.
He's a big part of that organisation, yeah.
But I'm sure he loved it. The last time Paddy saw him, he was watching a screening of EP8 and he cried. He was soft...
Yeah, it was an old school, like, creative executive. It was just, he was so passionate about story and that sort of stuff. And So we've got lots of ideas and lots of fun stuff and shit that makes us laugh. And we're also aware that, you know, no one expected this show, like, season one, you know? So
this
this
is a word of mouth thing, though. That's what I love.
Super word of mouth. So I think the second season when we do it, it's got to be at least 20% better to hit just the same note, you know?
I think so.
Yeah, we've got to make it good.
Yeah, it's funny when it was coming out on April 11, we're like, should we do a lot of press? And they're like, we're just gonna take incoming right now. And then we're like, oh, okay. And then they've just started coming, all these press requests have come in the last 6 weeks and they just keep growing and we're like, okay. It seems like it's garnering something.
That's the best way to do it, though.
Yeah. You can't manufacture that.
No.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just talk to you about episode 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a low cringe threshold and it was almost unbearably
good.
Watching him with the friends, you mean?
Yes.
Horrible.
Right?
So good.
Disgusting.
So
awful. Good. Like, I wanted to peel my skin off.
Yeah.
So awful. I've actually heard that a few women especially have gone, had to pause and take a walk around my apartment because Gordon was so sad and hard to watch.
For real. Like, I've watched the whole series and I'm low-key obsessed with it, right? So I watched the whole series and I watched it again before I knew that this was happening.
Amazing.
But I haven't been able to watch episode 7. So I've done 1 to 6 and then I've had to stop because I have to limber up because it's, even though I've watched it, it's that thing because, like, he's just so desperate to be accepted and to do the right thing. And then, no offence, she's a bit of an asshole.
I know,
and
but
then,
isn't it great that she's a bit of an asshole?
Yes, because it's refreshing because usually it's, like, the other way around.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, like, chicks can, like, I don't know, I can't speak from a hetero male perspective, but, like, girls can be suddenly like, I don't know if I like him anymore.
Yeah.
And it can turn us into a bit mean.
Yeah.
And I just didn't, you don't want your characters to be perfect. And she'd been a bit of a legend and suddenly she wasn't being a legend anymore. And one of my oldest girlfriends, Kate, she messaged me and she's like, I hated Ashley in Ep 7. I'm so mad at her. She was so mean to Gordon. I was like, good.
Yeah, nuance, right? We all have these layers and she can't be then, like good all the time and likeable and lovable and stuff because everyone's got that side.
And you can forgive her in Ep 8 when she kind of goes, exactly. I'm sorry, I was a bit of an asshole.
Yeah, that's right.
Like it's complicated. It's a bit, it's not clear like why. I mean, she just wasn't feeling it. And he was acting really thirsty.
Yeah.
He was acting weird.
He was trying to do the right thing, but he got so tense about it. But Ep 7, the end of Ep 7 is one of my favourite endings, that fight that we have.
Yeah.
I just love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that track that we use, that Holly Throsby track I loved, and then she sees the lost sign.
It's very lost raw, the end of it. It's just so like, you know.
You know that fight, sorry, that I remember it had been a long week. I think my grandma had died the day before this day. And I was very tired and emotional and I saw this, you know, on the call sheet it has always the list of what you're shooting that day. And then next to it has like the page count. So you might see like interior bar, 6/8 of a page. You're like, oh, that'll be easy. And it was late, the sun was setting, like, and then I saw at the end of the call sheet it was like, Ashley and Gordon have a fight on the street. Something like 5 pages. And I was like, oh, my God.
That's a lot, especially when you're like, you know, tired. Not in the right headspace.
And I was like, oh, my goodness.
But it was the right headspace.
I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
I don't want to fight on the street. I don't want to fight on the street. I don't want to, like, I don't know. I just didn't feel like I had it in me. And then Patty is such a beautiful and generous actor that it just was turned into fun again. It turned into, like, tennis. You know, as soon as we got our lines down, which sounds crazy because we wrote them, but, like, you've still got to learn them.
Yeah.
It became fun. Mm. It was like, let's just get into it. You know, no, you suck.
You got into it, guys.
Oh, yeah.
It was heartbreaking. Like, it was really emotional.
They were so mean to each other.
Yeah, awful, but in that way that couples can be when they really like each other, but they're really frustrated.
That's right.
I love a good fight. Pat doesn't like fighting as much as
which is almost annoying, right? It's even more annoying when you want to have that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the least I've ever fought in a relationship. Yeah. It's the most Patty's
which is healthy,
fought.
But also annoying.
Yeah.
But
please
say that none of those outfits were from your actual wardrobe, Patrick.
No, but I kept them. I think they were a good look for me.
I mean, the tie-dye was kind of okay. It was that hoodie. That was a hard one.
The hoodie was shocking, wasn't it?
It was that lime green. I don't think anyone could pull that off.
Except Billie Eilish.
Oh, yeah.
And then she finished it.
Fair enough. Last of all, because we have to wrap up, I know you like you've got a busy schedule and stuff. I just got to tell you on behalf of Pilot TV Pod, we are Team Gordon in terms of Ryan is a massive, massive bellend.
Yeah.
Right? Just going to end it there. He's a massive bellend.
Yeah.
And Gordon was totally right.
It's not the word I'd use, but yes.
Yes, I know. Look, just in case any kids are listening to this.
It's not Ryan's fault. He was written that way, but he needed a good job at it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's always that one person that was going to tip him over the edge, wasn't it?
It was Ryan.
Ryan was definitely that guy.
Yeah.
And I loved actually James, the guy, well, his name's Ty, but who played my ex. I love cutting to him at that moment when Ryan makes fun of him, all right, calm down, Grandpa, whatever he says, and watching James go like he's, he feels, it's such fuel to the fire having Ashley's hot ex-boyfriend laugh at you.
Oh, God,
that's what
horrific.
Makes him call
like
him
a car crash. Yeah. Slow-mo.
Yeah.
Awful.
It's great. I love
awful, but brilliant.
Thanks, Kay.
Thank you so much. I can't wait for series 2 and you've got to come over again and we've got to do a long chat.
Okay.
Yeah, we will.
Done.
Absolutely.
Deal. But Colin, you've got to bring Colin.
Oh, he's not ours. I think he's...
Tell you what, we'll find a local border terrier.
Okay, fine.
Okay?
Because apparently they all look the same.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Right, that was our Colin from Accounts interview. Kay was everything you dreamed it would be.
Oh, more. I absolutely love that. What a power couple they are. And I just love the fact that she was the one who sort of wrote that first episode and just totally owns it. You know, she's like, no, I want that writing credit. I did it. And it's the first time she's ever written a script. It's so frustrating, but also very admirable.
Yes. I like the fact that James describes you as stalking them when you went into them. When he interviews like people, 8 people from Silo or The Expanse.
And also, he says I'm stalking them and he arranged the interview for me.
Yeah. So. I feel you're pulling the curtain too far back.
No, I would happily say I'm a stalker of them because I think they're fantastic.
Did they bring Colin?
No.
Where was Colin?
As you would have heard from the interview, James.
Which I've clearly listened to, yes.
You clearly listened to. He is at home. He goes by a different name. He's not Colin and he's very interchangeable.
What's his real name?
He's, I mean, Zach, I think.
Zach from Accounts.
Yes.
It's less good. Less good name. Okay, should we talk about news? We should probably, yes, without spending too much time on the BAFTAs, at least go through the top line. Now, Boydie, you were on the jury again, weren't you?
I was on one jury. They're separate juries.
So which category did you ruin, just for the record?
I was on Best Actor. Yes, which I think you'll find is one of the most, I'm going to say it, the best shortlist for any category.
Talk us through it. Who was in it?
Possibly the best shortlist ever.
Okay.
Ben Whishaw, This Is Going to Hurt.
Yeah.
Chesky Spencer, The English.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy, Peaky Blinders. Mm. Gary Oldman, Slow Horses. Martin Freeman, The Responder. And Taron Egerton, Blackbird. Whishaw, Spencer, Murphy, Oldman, Freeman. What? Six legends.
How long were you deliberating on this one?
A long time. There was a lot of stuff to watch, a lot of deliberation. It was fascinating, actually, and a really amazing jury. Prano Bailey Bond, you know, was on the jury. Other people whose names I can't remember right now on the jury. But it was real hype. Like Colin Salmon was on it.
Colin Salmon.
Actual proper actors on it. Klaes Bang was on it.
Really?
Klaes Bang. I can say this now because you have to keep it a secret that you're on a jury until the actual BAFTAs themselves. I was on a jury with Klaes Bang, the brilliantly horrible central character from Bad Sisters.
The prick. Yes.
And
yeah,
the highlight of one of the highlights of my life was when I said something about one of the performances and he said, I agree with Boy.
You've made it, Boyd.
Yeah.
So it was a fantastic thing. And the winner was Ben Whishaw, which I think it was the right choice.
That's a difficult one, though, isn't it?
It was so tough.
Because any of them would be worthy winners. Yeah. I'm surprised that you weren't lobbying for Martin Freeman.
Well, I think...
Well, who's to say he wasn't,
though? Who's to say he wasn't?
Let's not reveal it.
I'm not going to reveal the machinations.
Of course. What happens in the room stays in the room.
Yeah, you can say when someone agreed with me, but that's about as much as I can say about anything. But yeah, no, they were all absolutely phenomenal. And I have to say, I spoke to Taron Egerton on the night as well. This is
name. Of course you did.
After snubbing him horribly, yes.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, man, you know, what he was like... He genuinely was thrilled to be in that company. He was like, you know, when people say that and they don't really mean it, but he was very much modestly saying what an incredible list it was. And Ben Whishaw is in This Is Going to
Hurt. I mean, they're all
phenomenal. Yeah, and actually, to be honest, Actress was incredible as well. So I just read the Billy Piper, I Hate Susie 2, Imelda Staunton as the Queen in The Crown, Winslet, I Am Ruth, Maxine Peake for Anne, Sarah Lancashire for Julia, not for Happy Valley, because that's next year, Happy Valley, and Vicky McClure for Without Sin, which we reviewed on the pod last week. So again, that's an incredible six fantastic actresses, and Winslet won, I think, again, rightly, I think. I Am Ruth was phenomenal.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
So those were the big acting ones, I think, were brilliant. You know what the biggest surprise... I don't think there were many surprises, I have to say. I think mostly the winners... You know, were the right winners, roughly. Derry Girls won Best Scripted Comedy. Just going through.
Siobhan McSweeney, while we're on Derry Girls.
McSweeney, comedy performance. The two surprise categories were miniseries, which was A Spy Among Friends. Remember we watched that?
Mm-hmm.
The Thief, His Wife and the Canoe, which was a dramatized true story. This Is Going to Hurt. The winner was Mood, which I don't know if you even remember, was kind of like a musical a drama that was on BBC Three last year, created by Nicole Leckie. And it was good. It was really good. But I think that's a surprise that it beat This Is Going to Hurt, because I think This Is Going to Hurt was the absolute out front favourite in that category. And the other, and I would say controversial winner, was in the international section.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
Yes. So the nominees here, Kay, were The Bear.
Yep.
Dharma, the Jeffrey Dharma story, Monster. Wednesday, you know, the huge Netflix hit. Usekin, which is a French show, and Pachinko.
Yep.
Which we watched and very much liked. And The White Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone assumed The White Lotus was going to win, at least. Dharma, the Jeffrey Dharma story, won. Mm. And I think that is a real controversy.
Now, I've not seen Dharma, so I don't really feel that I can comment on its quality. But certainly everyone I've spoken to has been quite scathing about it. So
I think this is what happened. So here's my theory. Because the thing about the BAFTAs is you're only... They select one episode.
Yeah, you told me this before, which is mad.
It's slightly mad. Not only can you only judge it on the single episode you're sent, the jury that everyone in the jury watches, you're specifically told not to say, oh, but the rest of the series was brilliant. So the one episode that Dharma, I reckon, there's one episode of Dharma, I don't know if you remember at the time when it went out, I mentioned it on this podcast, that there's an episode which is victim focused, which focuses on one victim of Jeffrey Dharma and tells their story from their point of view. And that is the best episode. Mm. And it's actually much, much better episode
but
than
not
the rest of it.
representative of the show as
slightly
a whole.
Unrepresentative of the rest of the show, I would say. Whereas maybe White Lotus, if they maybe if they went with the first episode, I don't know. Well, who knows?
Who picks the episode and how?
The people who enter it, so HBO slash
Sky. Oh, okay. Yeah. So they get to pick the episode that they want to be.
But what often happens is, and this is I've heard this quite a lot, is you go, I would never appear that episode. And I think the White Lotus particularly suffers if you take an episode in isolation, because it's such an ongoing story. It really is like it builds and builds and builds and builds to the finale. Whereas that episode of Dharma was much more of a standalone thing. So I think that's my theory as to why it won.
It's a difficult thing that, like, we've talked about this before, but I guess if you're expecting people to judge it, you can't expect people to watch every episode of every show in competition. So I understand the logistics of it, but it doesn't obviously help.
I think it's the only way of doing it.
Probably,
I was particularly thrilled that Lenny Rush won for Best Male Performance for Am I Being Unreasonable?
Am I Being Unreasonable? Mm. Yeah, he beat Daniel Radcliffe in that. John Poynting from Big Boys, Joseph Gilgan, your favourite from Brassic.
Yeah, and also I do like John
Matt
Poynting
Berry
as well. Yeah, it was a strong category.
Stephen Merchant? I mean, that was a great... All the acting categories were absolutely brilliant, I have to say. Fantastic. Phenomenal. The other category I was annoyed about, and you'll identify with this, James, is The Chase didn't win in daytime. And The Repair Shop, A Royal Visit did, which didn't even go out in the daytime. It went out in prime time.
But Claudia won for The Traitors.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
All good.
There was loads of Traitors.
Yeah, everyone was delighted about that. Yeah. And The Traitors itself won Best Reality and Constructed Factual.
I can't wait for the new series to come on and for us to review it.
Traitors, I think you have to wait a while.
Yeah, until hell freezes over.
James, you like seeing
it. Yes, steady. But it still doesn't get qualified to be reviewed on the podcast.
I should say, big shout out to my friend Susie, who produced Friday Night Live on Channel 4, which won in the Comedy Entertainment Programme.
It did.
Absolute triumph all round for her. And Ben Elton, who hosted it. Any more categories you want to mention?
No, fine. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that covers off most of the BAFTA stuff. What other news has there been?
Oh, Bad Sisters won. Sorry, I thought I finished.
It won a couple, didn't it, Bad Sisters?
This was interesting. Bad Sisters won Best Drama Series, and it beat The Responder, Sherwood and Somewhere Boy. And I would say they were all interesting. Like, I would say Sherwood or The Responder would have been but Bad Sisters, which was quite comedic.
But yeah, I was about to say, I would not have classed that as a drama.
That's
but obviously, they choose what category to nominate it for, and they've chosen drama. Yeah. But it's a black comedy.
Yeah, but what a triumph that it ended up being.
I mean, fair play to them. Yeah. Like, clearly, they surprising.
There you go. But I really have finished talking about the BAFTA.
Okay, BAFTA's then done. In other TV news, what else have we got? What has been happening?
Okay, my quick bit of news, very quick emphasis on quick, is, and just like that's got a date, 22nd of June, we can expect the new series to air. Yeah, you'll be happy about that, James. A lot of people do watch it, though, so... F you.
That's never stopped him from taking that attitude.
And also, more importantly,
we set that show on fire on this podcast when we first reviewed it. And it wasn't until afterwards you all did a reverse angry ferret on the whole thing and just like, and decided that it was great.
I think my review is more nuanced than that, but carry on.
Like, Terry was spitting blood over that show
then
and then completely turned around on it.
Turned around,
But that's fine. You can do that. You can feel, you can change your opinion on something. Anyway, more importantly, Virgin River has been renewed for a sixth season, even though the fifth season isn't out yet. They've announced that the sixth season has been confirmed. James, I know for one, will be absolutely thrilled.
I'm pretty psyched about it. It can be said.
Any quick news from you, James?
Well, funnily enough, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the Marvel stuff. So Echo, which is one of the... So we got release dates for Loki Season 2 and Echo, both coming to Disney Plus later this year. But what's interesting is the Echo release is coming on November 29th. Not the first episode of Echo, but all of Echo. Oh. So they're dropping the entire series in one day, which is not something that Disney Plus does at all. No. And not something they are planning to do, it seems, for any of their others. But for that one show, it's getting a Netflix-style all-at-once binge drop.
Did they explain why?
I mean, if they did, I didn't see it. So I have no idea why they've done
it. When's it debut airing?
The 29th of November.
Maybe it's like a Thanksgiving thing?
Maybe. Maybe it's a gift.
Like a Thanksgiving gift.
But that was quite surprising to me. I don't know what's going on there. There was a picture came out of Raylan Givens, Timothy Oliphant, in the new Justified spin-off series, limited series, which is coming. His hat has a new studded leather band, just in case you were wondering.
Brilliant.
So that's the thing. Anything else?
Netflix confirmed that the sixth and final season of The Crown is going to arrive this autumn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is slightly sooner than I expected, actually.
Yeah.
But that will be. And that's going to be like the big Diana, death series.
Oh,
it's going to be interesting how they deal with that.
I'm kind of dreading it.
Yeah. Yeah, same. And Mike Flanagan's Fall of the House of Usher is due also in the autumn, or Fall, as I believe they call it in America. And that is the last show that he's done for Netflix because he's moved to Amazon. You know, he's got a huge deal with Amazon, Mike Flanagan. But we love Mike Flanagan's work, obviously. Sex Education will be back, series 4. Around
I'm excited
then.
For that.
Yeah, yeah.
Although Maeve is not going to be in it as much as she has said
right.
in
she's
the
away,
past.
Right?
Which is a shame she's gone to America.
It'll still be great, though.
It will be good. It will be good. But I will miss the character of Maeve.
Yeah. But all the American kind of, all the big streamers and networks do their upfronts
yes.
this week. So they're all kind of announcing their big shows.
Upfronts, which is, of course, what Naked Attraction is famous for.
Obsessed.
Amazing. Joke.
I heard the air quotes
generous.
Around the word joke.
Yeah, being very, yeah. very I mean, generous.
Yeah.
And that's the end of news. Right.
Okay. Kay's got dinner to go to. Come on.
Yeah, Kay's got dinner to go to. So we're going to end news right there, lest her dinner get cold. Let's move on to reviews. And first up this week, we have Platonic, which is a new half-hour comedy on Apple TV Plus, to give it its full name, which stars Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne as former best friends who drift apart later in life and only to reconnect after he gets divorced. Now, Kay,
yeah.
please state the nature of your love for this.
Do you know what? When it first started, I was like, I don't know. I wasn't loving it. I was thinking, oh God, it feels a bit like it's really trying to, you know, it's making this point about can men and women be friends? And also, you know, there's a bit where Rose's character, who's called Sylvia, is talking about how the fact that women often invisible in their 40s, which is true, but I just felt it wasn't very subtle. And I was like, oh God, is this going to just be very like heavy handed throughout? But actually, once like I watched more of it and I actually watched two episodes, it really did, you know, I really did warm to it. And it's funny. And I really like the fact that it's basically about these two best friends who have fallen out. They grew up, like they went to college together in time as they've got become adults, they've fallen out, and she wants to reconnect with him. And it's about, can they do so? Can they recapture that magic they had together? And, you know, they had so much in common, but do they have anything in common now? They've both gone down different paths. She's become like a housewife. She's got some kids. She's settled in the suburbs. He's like newly divorced and is working in a bar. They've got very different lives now, but it's about that friendship. And I really engage. And for me, the thing that drew me in and made me change my mind is because their chemistry together is so good. And so, I enjoyed it. Overall, I did enjoy it.
I thought it was really good, actually. I wasn't dreading it, but I'm slightly, what's the word, not cynical. I get slightly irritated by, you know, the American movies directed by, like, Nick Stoller created this, and he, you know, has created a lot of those kind of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Get Him to the Greek, The Five-Year Engagement, Neighbours, which was known in America as Neighbours, known here as Bad Neighbours, wasn't it? Was that what it was called here?
Yeah.
Which is what Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen were both in, that's husband and wife. And all of those films, they irritate me slightly because they're all like often frequently really funny, but they all encourage the cast to over-improvise.
Yes.
And they're full of like way too long scenes where the cast is just, you know...
Well, it's that Judd Apatow style
yeah,
of comedy, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm. And this is all kind of became, particularly in the late 2000s, like every single American mainstream comedy film had too much improvisation and was too kind of... So I was slightly like, is this just going to be another one of those things? I think this is one of the best things Nicholas Stoller's done for a long time because it works in... This feels much tighter... And more kind of reined in, if you like, than his films, his overlong, indulgent films. So I was pleasantly surprised. And I think there is really good chemistry between Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen. I thought that the supporting cast, Luke McFarlane from Bros, plays her husband, the hunky, handsome husband. And he's like brilliantly kind of naive. He's like, oh yeah, go and see your ex. He's not the ex, but go and see your platonic friend. It'll all be fine. Yeah, reconnect with him. When she's like doubting the wisdom of actually doing that, because she obviously does fancy him, I think.
Do you think?
I didn't pick that up at all.
It's ambiguous. And I think what it is...
It is ambiguous.
I think it's that they understand each other and like they... Yeah. He fulfills something that she needs that she doesn't necessarily get from, you know, like as a platonic friend.
Completely. Yeah. But there's one shot of her, like a kind of slightly lingering look at him, which I thought was obviously deployed.
Yeah, but you do that to me and it's platonic.
Well, it's like James watching Naked Attraction.
Can I just say, since you brought up Naked Attraction again, the most awkward thing about that show is the hug.
Oh,
do you know
100%.
The hug is excruciating.
Well, let me just say this as well about it. When there's two gay guys doing it, the hug is like excruciating. You're like, oh my God.
They have to do a naked hug where they have to contort their bodies at angles so their genitals don't come within at least 2 feet of each other.
It's kind of easier to do, you know what I mean, with a man or with two men, avoiding accidental knob rubbing.
Oh my God.
Since you brought it up.
Right. No. Who was playing Pilot TV Bingo? Who had accidental knob rubbing on their card? Because
fine.
If you did, you win.
Rip my ears off.
Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks.
Anyway, back to Platonic. A lot of them, by the way. The other thing about Naked Attraction is they very rarely do they ever go on a successful date. Hardly ever.
Of course not.
Yeah, just saying, by the way.
So they never get to see each other naked again.
Exactly.
It's just that one occasion.
Has been 95% Naked Attraction.
Yeah.
As they may well be going for.
Who knew? I really like the mood of this back to Platonic. It's really good. It's funny.
How many episodes have you seen?
Two.
Yeah,
only two.
Yeah.
And they're just both, you know, both of them, like Rose Byrne can often be quite a little bit irritating sometimes in her films.
Don't hold back.
She can. Sometimes. Sorry.
Poor Rose Byrne.
I know.
Can I just say to Rose Byrne, she gets to use her actual accent in this, which she rarely does.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think she's very much at home and relaxed in this role. It's a really good role. I'm sorry. She's not always irritating.
It's a good role. She's slightly less irritating than usual, says Boyd.
Same for Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen can be, all of these.
I love when Seth Rogen laughs. He sounds like Fozzie Bear.
Yes, he does. Completely.
Do you think?
Yeah, completely. It's good.
James, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I agree with most of what you said. I didn't think it was annoying.
It's a comedy.
Yes. I didn't think it was laugh out loud funny, but I quite enjoyed it. I won't be watching any more of it, but I quite enjoyed it.
Classic.
It was good.
There was a Naked Attraction to us.
It was no Naked Attraction.
Hugs
with naked people.
He gives it all the chat of like, oh yes, I'm done with that now. He's definitely going to watch more Naked Attraction.
I thought you were talking about this for a second.
You're definitely going back to Naked Attraction.
I don't know that I am.
I
don't feel like there was a plot twist at the end that I need resolved.
Your mouth is saying no, your eyes are saying yes.
You're going full poker face on me now. You're like, bullshit, wow, I call bullshit. Yeah.
I am calling bullshit on you.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, if I do bring it up, it will come into what we've been watching next week. Right, okay. So Platonic then, which is on Apple TV Plus on... Well, it's a comedy, Wednesday.
Wednesday
comedy night on Apple TV Plus. Oh, God. Next up, we have Maryland. Not Maryland, Maryland. Now, and there's a crucial distinction here. This is on ITV, and this sees Saran Jones and Eve Best as two slightly estranged sisters who reunite after the body of their mother is found on a beach on the Isle of Man. Boydie, they say no man is an island, except, of course, the Isle of Man, which presumably is the sole exception. What did you think of this?
The funny thing about this is, it's set on the Isle of Man, right? And a lot of the... What are you shaking your head about?
Terrible.
Oh, to James.
Yeah,
oh, no,
it's
just,
terrible.
Just glossing over
Boy, just ignores it. That doesn't even exist.
But the Isle of Man is interesting because the Isle of Man location is central to this whole storyline, which is that these two sisters' mothers found dead on the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
On
a beach
in
the Isle of Man. That's the premise, not a spoiler.
That's the premise, exactly. Happens in the opening scene. And it's all about them going to the Isle of Man to see what's going on. She's having a secret life on the Isle of Man. It's not even shot on the Isle of Man.
Is it not?
Shot in Ireland.
I didn't know that.
Exactly. It's really weird.
Why?
I know. Fuck no.
I need to know. I need to know why this is shot in the Isle of Man.
The other thing that's weird about it is, I don't know if this is still the case, but years ago, a film was made. Like, they used to make quite a lot of films on the Isle of Man, and there was like a tax break reason why. So it was like, it was cheap to film on the Isle of Man. So I was like, half of me was like, this whole thing is built around the Isle of Man because it's quite cheap to film there, but they didn't even film it there. So yeah, it's insane. And weird. It's filmed in Ireland. Anyway, once you get over that,
if you can.
Intriguingly, Saran Jones is her own idea that she came up with. She came up with the basic premise of two estranged sisters, very different sisters, and finding out that their mother lives a mysterious double life. And the actual script is written by Anne-Marie O'Connor of Hellraiser's fame, which both Kay and I really
I
liked.
Love Hellraiser.
Fantastic. Oh, you didn't like because you don't like comedy. and Anne-Marie O'Connor generally is known for a comedy writing, I think, more than drama. But I think she does a really, really good job of kind of giving them dialogue that is kind of believable, I think, and authentic, and not kind of too over the top.
But also interesting. It's not as boring as normal people speaking.
Exactly, 100%. And it's directed by Sue Tully of Line of Duty fame, who also does a really good job. This, what?
of EastEnders fame.
Well, indeed, and Grange Hill fame, if you want to how far you want to go back. Yeah. But she's now an incredibly successful director.
Yeah, of
brilliant, brilliant director. It's really well shot, nicely shot, and kind of moody and atmospheric. But the best, the absolute best thing about it is the interaction between the two sisters, played by Saran Jones and Eve Best. And what I think is interesting is Saran Jones's character, who's like a, you know, she's got family, she's got husband and kids in Manchester, and she deals with her dad quite a lot, who lives close by. And she, her character's fairly straightforward, at least to begin with. Right?
She's a dutiful daughter,
family-oriented,
yeah, sees her parents all the time, yada,
exactly.
Yada.
Whereas Eve Best's character is an absolute, I don't want to use the B word, but some people might use the B word.
I think she's got hard edges. She's definitely hard edges.
To call her that.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah, boy, you're so facile.
Some people would call her that. I'm not facile. So, but she's spiky.
Yeah.
She's quite posh. She lives in London and has a high-powered job in London. She's constantly on her phone dealing with issues.
She's a little bit of a stereotype at first. You know, she's sort of like, you know.
Well, this is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she is a bit of a stereotype, but she is brilliant. I think Eve Best is the star of the show.
Yes.
And she was great in House of the Dragon, which she was like dragon riding. What's her name? In House of the Dragon?
Yes, Boydy. Her name is Rhaenys Targaryen. The queen that never was, that wasn't.
Was
the queen that almost was.
She was furious for most of the time, wasn't she?
Furious queen.
Yeah, furious queen.
Rhaenys Targaryen.
She's great because she takes a character that could be stereotypical and one-dimensional and fleshes her out totally. So you believe completely that she is this kind of big, you know, kind of quite spiky figure who is almost like weirdly rude to her own sister. You know, she's kind of like...
It's hard to know if they're estranged or they're just like normal siblings where, you know, they've just gone their separate ways. The thing I love about this most, I think I completely agree with you, is about the sisters, but ultimately Eve Best's character, is that this basically is an exploration of grief of siblings, but also how, you know, all the old resentments and rivalry, you know, comes to the surface. Because the whole thing is that Saran Jones's character, you know, and this happens in families, you see it all the time, where one sibling thinks they know the parents more, or they love, you know, they really take...
Well, she's closer to her mother, isn't she?
Yeah, but takes ownership almost of the grief, right?
Yeah, like, and I care because I was close to her. You fucked off to London, you don't get to be as sad as I am, Sarah.
Yeah, but even just like in terms of like, you know, just owning the grief more. And like, and I think Eve Best's character is so good because she's sort of like... No, you know, like I also love my mum just because I don't speak to her all the time, or you know, there's this friction there that I think is so realistic. And I enjoyed it for that reason. I think the portrayal of grief between siblings and obviously it's intriguing, this whole double life thing. Hold up, I just got to mention. Hello, Hugh Quashie is in it. Who's fantastic.
Hello, actual Stockard Channing is in it.
I was limbering up for that.
Sorry,
ruined it.
I want to start with him because he plays the fantastically named character Pete Ribeiro.
I did flag that. There was going to be a no relation gag for there and there.
Did you flag it though, James?
Did you? Spelt correctly as well, unusually.
Yep.
A podcast correctly. Which contains another Dyer also contains another Ribeiro. I was looking for another Hilton, but couldn't find one.
Yeah. Oh, damn it. But as you so rudely interrupted, yes, it does also star Stockard Channing, who is incredible as the mum's friend, who, and, you know, she presents another strand to the story, which we don't fully understand yet, which is also intriguing. But yeah.
And Dean Lennox Kelly is the only taxi driver on the island,
which is funny, which he manages to offend
the cult cast is great. And Andrew Knott plays Saran Jones's husband, and Andrew Knott was in the History Boys, the original version of History Boys, with James Corden and Russell Tovey. And I met him in LA when I was in LA because he went to see the show. James got him to come over and see the final show because they're still really good mates.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, which is very sweet. And he was a lovely guy. And he's in this, and he's very good in this as the husband. Because you see more, if you see episode two, you see more of that family life thing becomes more of an issue as it goes on. It's interesting. But I think this is yet another example of a superior ITV primetime drama, James.
It is good. It is good. Like, I thought I had this worked out quite early on. And in my head, I was like, well, I know where this is going. I already know.
Sound like you, James.
And then obviously I was utterly wrong and completely, you know, wide of the mark. And actually, it's fascinating. I think the strength here is partly because you want to know genuinely what happened, because I think by the end of it, you're so invested emotionally in their familial relationship. You need to, because they need the answer so badly. I think you also want the answer badly. Yeah. But I think it's the two of them together, the two sisters, because it's such a believable familiarity. The fact that they almost regress to childhood at times in the way they're being silly, but then they also regress to just bickering all the time. And it's partly because they're very different people, but also because it's just that sibling thing, isn't it? Yeah, it's very, very well written and extremely well cast.
So, Side note. Mm-hmm. Who's still Tops and Tails?
Do you know what? I did think that. I thought, it's you're so, both sisters, just sleep next to each other. That's weird.
But also just generally, yeah, I thought exactly the same thing, but also, as a concept, it's so weird because it's just like a feet-smelling exercise, isn't it? It's just gross. Who does that anymore?
I mean, like, I do feel a little bit, it wasn't a single bed. Like, you could have just slept next to each other and it wouldn't have been weird.
You're sisters, it's fine. That, even if you're not sisters, it's fine.
But then, you know, I just assume that maybe that was just something they did as kids and called it top and tailing, and maybe that was a thing. That was in my head, that's how I, because the only way I could
create a whole backstory for it, yes.
Well, Maryland then, which airs on ITV, when, Boydie?
It starts today, Monday, and it's on nightly, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 o'clock, ITV1, or all available on ITVX.
It airs nightly, so you can watch it in bed while top and tailing with the person of your choice. Exciting
Who
stuff.
Who you've met on Naked Attraction.
Who you may or may not have met on Naked Attraction. Yes, indeed. Right, finally, and I do mean finally, since we've been waiting for it for literally months, we have Poker Face. This is Rian Johnson's Columbo-style murder of the week procedural, and this one stars Natasha Lyonne as Charlie Kale, who has the uncanny ability to tell when anyone is lying. Kay, with the caveat that I have absolutely no idea whether you are lying, what did you think of this?
I really liked it. I thought it was so, so, so good. It's been worth the wait. I mean, as you said, you know, actually, I don't know, because I tuned out.
As you probably said during one of your tedious introductions. Yeah.
When did you tune out exactly?
I tuned out after you said about Knives Out. I was like, because I was sort of thinking, how late am I going to be to this dinner? Sorry. Anyway, as you might have said, Natasha plays a character called Charlie Kale, who is a drunk, slightly eccentric, extraordinary woman who can somehow tell when people are lying or not, which will be very useful around here. So she's currently working in a casino, and I don't want to say too much about this because, you know, there's so many spoilers we could give away and I don't want to, but her gifts are called upon to use by her boss, played by Adrian Brody, and it's basically a money-making scheme, but all isn't as it seems. And it's just so good. And this is all, you know, this all rests upon her just being excellent in this role. I don't know if you said this, James, because again, I wasn't listening, but it's a case of the week. So both the director and Natasha were big fans of Columbo, apparently. I read that in Boyd's review. And you can, so we see that obviously in the series structure because it is a case per episode, but also in her inability to leave things. She constantly is coming back to the investigation. You know, like in that Columbo,
she can't let anything go.
She can't let anything lie. She's relentless. But I think she's a fab character because she's like this, portrayed as this trailer trash, but she has this really strong moral compass. I enjoyed her story and I can't wait to see how it pans out.
Yeah, she has her own kind of idiosyncrasies.
Mm. She's got Boydie syndrome.
Yes.
She has a thing where she can't remember the names of things and she goes to hilarious extents to try and... Yeah. The thing with the... Oh, you know, with and it looks like a cat,
the word for
but
locker.
It's not a cat.
Yeah. She can't remember the word for locker.
But that's a brilliant idiosyncrasy to give her.
It's fantastic, yeah. And she has other, like, physical little kind of quirks as well. I mean, so not only is the Columbo influence there on the format, which also, by the way, not only is it a case of the week, but it's you see the murder or the crime at the beginning and you then... in the inverted format. So you don't, it's not a whodunit, it's a how, why. Yeah,
How to catch them.
Thank you. There you go. So it very much, but it's so, it's like if Columbo started now with a woman kind of like amateur sleuth at the centre of it with swearing and violence. The violence can be quite, you know, a little bit shocking sometimes. You know, it's more, you know, Columbo was made for, you know, mainstream TV, the most mainstream TV. So this is edgier, but not kind of in a forced way, just in a this is what it would be like now way if this person, this amateur sleuth, did go around solving crimes. And I think the one thing, and it's brilliant that Rian Johnson's written the first two episodes, or it's the second episode, cause to get more of a feel of the...
So did I.
Yeah, of the kind of case of the week scenario. And the second episode has quite a long build-up, doesn't it?
Really long.
Yeah, it's like, really,
really long.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the first one's quite long.
Yeah.
But the second one is really not. And also, I love the fact that the chronology... I was never a massive Columbo thing, but my understanding of Columbo is the crime happens chronologically, then he investigates.
Right.
Whereas this, the timelines are tied together.
And what he doesn't do brilliantly is he doesn't go, oh, you know, 5 hours earlier.
Yeah.
There's no, you have to work it out for yourself.
Yes.
What the hell
is going on?
Which
at first I was confused. And I was like, wait, is that...
Yeah. He's such a master. Obviously, he's done 2 Knives Out films, and I think both Knives Out films are fucking brilliant.
Agreed.
I love them. He's a master at this intricate plotting and using time in a kind of really interesting way. And talk about kind of, you know, respecting your audience, because in a way it's slightly confusing to start with, but then you kind of go along with it and you understand slowly what's going on.
I like it when you have to work something, right?
Oh, completely, 100%. It's brilliant. She is phenomenal, as you say. She's just fantastic.
She's the secret weapon, right?
She's so...
From that 60 a day voice to her attitude, to everything about her. Look, every minute she's on screen, she's compelling. Yeah. And I'm sure this would work brilliantly because he writes it beautifully. But that bit of casting is genius.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, yeah. And so he hasn't written the rest of the series. The rest of the series is written and directed by other people, effectively. But, you know, so I need to carry on watching it to see how many, you know, if they stand up to his ones, because his writing is so good. But I'm sure it will. Natasha Lyonne's written 1 episode. I saw episode 8, yeah. So it'd be fascinating to see how it plays out. But it's just a joy, as big a joy as everyone said it was when we were waiting for it to arrive.
It really is. And even though it's procedural, it made me want to keep watching it because she's such good company.
Yeah. Yeah, which shows you don't worry, don't get hung up on like the genre or the thing.
I know, but I like...
It's about the thing itself.
But also there's an amount of, without spoiling, there is an ongoing
ish.
Very loose thing.
Very
and
ish.
The fact that she's moving from place to place, again, feels very like Kane in Kung Fu, you know, the littlest hobo, you know, pick a show. But I like that she's going from place to place, so it's different people, different places, different things, different situations. Mm. Obviously, she has a lot of bad luck. She runs into a lot of problems, but... Yeah.
There is that classic detective show format, though, where it's like what they say about Midsommar Murders. It's like the most murdery place in the world.
Everywhere she goes.
She goes from one place to another. There's always a crime. How does that happen?
It's just delightful. Everything about it is delightful. And the texture of even the minor characters, especially in the second episode, all the minor characters, you feel they feel really like they have inner lives, they feel lived in, they feel well drawn.
Cliff Clavin from Cheers.
That's right. He's John Ratzenberger.
He's great. Yeah, John Ratzenberger. Yeah, fantastic.
You know, and the first one has Benjamin Bratt as well as Adrian Brody, and actor whose name I've forgotten from Orange is the New Black, isn't it, as well?
Yes.
It's
Hong Chao was in the second episode.
Hong Chao
really good.
Was in the second
fantastic.
Episode. Yes, really, really good in that. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good show.
There's a lot more going on, isn't there, than just also the case of the week. That's the other thing.
There is.
There's like side characters. Yes. There's like Hong Chao is a very interesting figure in the second episode.
I thought the second episode was actually better than the first.
I would agree with that.
I preferred the second episode.
I thought it was
great. But yes, so that is Poker Face, which finally comes to these shores on Sky Max on the...
Friday... 9 o'clock Sky Max /now, and the whole, but all 10 episodes will be available on Sky.
Ooh,
exciting!
Friday. Yeah.
Also airing this week is FUBAR. FUBAR, which is, of course, which is on Netflix, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger's first TV series, and it's kind of a spy saga in the same vein as True Lies. It is, as befits a show about spies, embargoed. You will be excited to hear. Thus, you can hear all about that one on Thursday's Pilot Plus. But what else is out, Boydie?
There is there's an Italian series called The Gymnasts, which arrives on Paramount Plus on Friday, which is a 6-part mystery set in the world of competitive girls' gymnastics. And it's about a group of women, young women, competing for the Olympic team. They're in the Alps and murdery things happen and stuff.
Yeah. Murdery things happen.
There's the Sister Boniface Mysteries, which is the biggest hit ever on Drama Channel on UK TV. That's back for a second season on Friday at 9 o'clock. What else?
American Born Chinese, which is on Disney Plus on Wednesday.
Which we didn't have screeners
for. But Michelle Yeoh and Ki-Hee Kwan of Everything Everywhere All at Once
it's
fame.
It's like a YA thing, isn't it?
It kind of, yes. It seems to be a blending of sort of fantasy and reality, but screeners weren't available for that one, so we couldn't review it.
Terry White will be very excited because Law & Order SVU is back on Tuesday on Sky Witness Now. That's her favourite show of all time. Do you know how many seasons it's on, Kate? I know you're late for dinner, but...
24.
This is the 24th season.
Close.
24 seasons.
Jesus Christ.
Fuck's sake. And there's a special premiere crossover with Law & Order Organised Crime, the spin-off, which starts the day before. So there's a crossover between Organised Crime and SVU, which people like Terry will be very excited about. And I want to mention Prehistoric Planet, which is the second season of that show, which is on Apple TV Plus on Monday, which is a spectacular VFX festival.
Which we've come a long way from Walking with Dinosaurs.
We've come a very long way. Honestly, the effects. Yes, I did host an event for Apple TV Plus,
but it's Jurassic Park level. Like, it's amazing.
It really is. Astonishing. Yeah. So that is on, and that runs every night this week. It's like an event on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
Monday to Friday, Prehistoric Planet 2.
And I thought the Ark was coming to Sky Sci-Fi, but you've since disabused me of this notion.
Yeah, it was down originally to start. Yeah, but
and now it's not starting this week. But that's good, because we weren't going to be able to review it this week because we had too much other stuff. But now we can review it when it finally airs.
We'll see.
This is exciting, especially for Kay, who really, really, really wants to go to dinner.
And you want to go home for Naked Attraction.
And I want to go home to watch Naked Attraction. Absolutely.
Yeah. Remember, when we pick our favourite show of the week, you can't choose
that. I can't pick Naked Attraction.
No. Dirty.
Speaking of which, what is our pick of the week?
Poker Face.
Poker Face, without
Poker
doubt.
Face and not Naked Attraction.
No.
Okay. Poker Face it is. That's it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it and or Naked Attraction and have yet to do so, please do head over to Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a 5 genital rating. Please follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, at James C. Dyer, at Kay Rivera, at Boyd Hilton. We will be back in your ears next week. And I've got to be honest with you, I do not have the first clue what we're doing next week. Because I've just checked the calendar and there is nothing in it for next week, so I've written nothing down.
That's because I haven't updated it.
Oh, it's absolutely your fault, without a doubt.
Yeah, there's actually quite a lot of stuff.
That was his passive-aggressive way of saying that.
It was my passive-aggressive way of blaming you for this.
There's the Gallows Poll,
okay,
which is your favourite Shane Meadows show.
Oh, great.
Again, another Terry White. There's White House Plumbers.
Oh, yes, White House Plumbers. Yes. Forgotten about that.
There is a thing called Deadlock on Prime Video.
Wow.
There's Changing Ends, Alan Carr comedy, sitcom.
Yeah.
You look forward to that, James. So yeah. There's load. Nacho, which is about the porn industry.
Okay.
In Spain.
That's
Italy?
Good.
Italy?
No, Spain.
Spain, thank you. So there's plenty.
Oh, so there's stuff.
Don't you worry.
So we won't have to end up reviewing Naked Attraction. Okay, good. Good to know. Fine. Brilliant. Until then. Bye, let's out.